Good morning.
Good morning.
Welcome to Crossroads. Well, we are in this series, Wisdom, where we're taking a look at challenging some of our assumptions about what wisdom is. And based on how God talks about wisdom, how different that is than maybe our preconceptions about what wisdom is. And one of the things we've been looking at is the fact that God tends to talk about wisdom in the terms of it being something we do. Not something we have or something we know, but something we do. And so that's been one of our kind of key recalibrations in this. But also we're starting to recalibrate and looking at the fact that often God's wisdom for us goes against the grain of the world, that there's a countercultural nature to the wisdom. And that could be somewhat frustrating to us because we tend to want to think about wisdom is always going to make sense and be perfectly logical for me, as opposed to wisdom may challenge some of the very logic that I have built my life on. And there's this one place in the Bible where I think the Apostle Paul kind of points out this challenge that we have with God's wisdom. And it's here in 1 Corinthians. Look at what he says here. Paul's writing, and he's speaking of God. He says, it's written that God says, I will destroy the wisdom of the wise. The intelligence of the intelligent I will frustrate. Where's the wise man? Where's the scholar? Where's the philosopher of this age? Has not God made foolish the wisdom of the world? For since, in the wisdom of God, the world through its wisdom did not know him, God was pleased through the foolishness of what was preached to save those who believe. The foolishness of God is wiser than man's wisdom, and the weakness of God is stronger than man's strength. And when you think about it, it probably shouldn't surprise us that maybe God's timeless wisdom just might run fairly countercultural to what our understanding is. When you think about it, if you understand anything at all about what followers of Christ believe or explore, is the fact that it's based on this notion, this worldview, that God came to earth to give us life through dying. And, you know, you think about it, the very basis of the belief is on that kind of countercultural notion. It should come as no surprise to us that God's wisdom also often crashes in our world and disagrees with our kind of nice intellectual logic, and also can often just seem downright foolish. We've been looking at wisdom and how indeed this path of wisdom can be very different than some of our going-in assumptions and a lot of the messages that we hear in life. And the main kind of thing that we've been discovering is the fact that we tend to think about wisdom as being accumulated knowledge. You know, so we tend to think about wisdom as, you know, if I can just get the right data, if I can just get enough information, enough knowledge in me, if I can just get enough knowledge in me, then I can count myself among the list of the wise. And I consider myself a wise person. Yeah, the long line of the wise. Or if I don't, then I won't be. I'll be among the list of those that are, you know, obviously not wise. Yes. All right, any Steeler fans out there, get used to it, okay? We're going to ride this one hard, okay? We let the Brown fans up here every once in a while do a little thing because, well, and we just think that's cute, you know? But Steelers are going after. And any time I can use Mother Teresa to do a jab at Ben Roethlisberger, I'm going to. You know, I think it. We tend to think that wisdom is this, you know, accumulated information. We tend to think of wisdom in the terms of how our language has grown to define it, a noun. But yet, when we look at how God talks about wisdom in the Bible, and to be honest with you, how we see it play out in people around us, wisdom is much more verbish than it is nounish. Wisdom is much more what we do, not what we know or what information we have. There's a philosophy professor at the University of Southern California whose work has really impacted my life by the name of Dallas Willard. I love the way he talks about this when it comes in terms of education and wisdom. Here's what he says. He says, we must recognize, first of all, that the aim of the popular teacher in Jesus' time was not to impart information, but to make a significant change in the lives of the hearers. Of course, that may require an information transfer, but it's a peculiarly modern notion that the aim of teaching is to bring people to know things that may have no effect at all on their lives. In our day, the teacher must get the information into them. We then test the patients to see if they got it by checking whether they can reproduce it in language rather than watching how they live. And this from the way we learn to the way we approach life can compound our misunderstanding of whether we are on the path of wisdom or not. We've talked about it in here before as the growing knowing-doing gap that we have. That our generation in particular seems to be an increasing gap between how much we know and what we do. We seem to have access to so much more information, so much knowledge, more knowledge than ever, but we're doing less and less of it. And in between those two is this increasing gap between knowing and doing. I heard one person describe it that our generation seems to be informationally stuffed and action starved. Informationally stuffed and action starved. And, you know, it makes me think of, you know, kind of the picture of, you know, watching a two-year-old in a high chair, you know, learn to eat. How many of you ever sat next to a two-year-old high chair learning to eat? Yeah, not, baby's cute, baby's eating, not. You know, and not, you know, you sit next to a two-year-old eating. If you're a new parent, you have a baby and they're going to be coming up and learning to eat. Let me just give you a little inside tip on this thing, okay? And it revolves choice of color for food, the color palette that you choose from. You know, you're going to want to work with basic neutrals early in the kid, you know, beiges. You want to work basically with beiges because the thing is, the first time the food goes into the kid's mouth is not going to be the last time you're seeing that food, okay? So if you start to choose oranges and purples and greens, it gets, you know, particularly ugly. And if you've ever sat next to a two-year-old eating a chicken nugget, it will turn you into a vegetarian in about 3 seconds flat, you know? One of the things, you know, that I've noticed with, other people's children, I should say, that I've noticed, is that one thing in particular happens with kids when they learn to eat is as much as they may like what they're eating, there's always one thing that they want more than what they're eating. Whatever you're eating. You know, whatever you're eating. They got their face stuffed with 9,500 Cheerios, but they want to make a play for your pasta. You know, they always want whatever you're eating. And there's some point in the life of kids that the parent has to say very early, say, hey, honey, eat what you've got, and then you can have more. You know, eat what you have, and then you can have more. And some of us never grow out of that posture in our life. We think that growth and wisdom, you know, growth of life is about stuffing more and more information in. Stuffing more and cramming more and more in, never stopping to think that it might be of equal value to stop and digest what we already have. Stuffing more and more in without digesting what we have. And the fact is, where that puts us in is this big gap between knowing and doing, and it's in that gap where wisdom lies. Because the fact is, any information you have in your life, anything that you know, whether it's facts, figures, proverbs, wisdom, you know, whatever that is, anything that you have that you don't do anything with, that's not resulting in action, is not wisdom. It's called trivia. It's trivia. Anything that you know that isn't making a difference in your life, isn't making your life different in any way, is trivia. And it's not that there's anything so wrong with trivia. Trivia is interesting, but we cannot confuse trivia with wisdom. The difference between trivia and wisdom is action. It's action. And that's how God defines wisdom, is that it's something we do, you know, not something we know. And it is such a clear picture in the Bible that when we really honestly look at some of these passages, it can become disturbing to us. Just how clear God is on this and how he talks about this. And it can challenge sometimes of how we think about, you know, even God's love and what it means to love God and what it means for us to love us. And if we're really honest in the way that we read these passages, it can challenge some of our perceptions. For instance, there's this one place where Jesus is speaking to his followers, his kind of closest followers, the disciples. And he's talking about love. And his teaching on that is captured within the book of John, one of the four gospels that's collected in our Bible, the four historical records of Jesus' life and teaching. In the gospel of John, John 14 to 21, this is what Jesus says within this context of talking about love. Jesus says, "Whoever has my commands and obeys them, he's the one who loves me. He who loves me will be loved by my Father, and I too will love him and show myself to him." Now read that kind of once more. Whoever has my commands and obeys them, he's the one who loves me. He who loves me will be loved by my Father, and I too will love him and show myself to him. Now we're going to leave that up there for a minute because there's something I want to do with it. When I was in business, there was this thing you could do called reverse engineering. And which if one of my competitors brought a product out, I could have somebody purchase that product, I could give it to my product development folks, and they would tear it apart to understand what it was made of and how it had been made. And it was called reverse engineering because you start with the end product and then you tear it apart to understand it. So what I want to do with the scripture is I want to reverse engineer it right now. I want to really get clear about what it's saying and do it by taking the end product and working backwards. So here we go. I'm going to do this with two basic questions working backwards. And the first question is, who does God show himself to? Who does God show himself to? Well, it says that he who loves me will be loved by my Father and I'll show myself to him. Okay. God shows himself to those that love him. God shows himself to those that love him. Okay, we need to back up a little bit more, though, because then that begs the question, okay, God shows himself to those that love him. Who loves him? Who does God consider loves him? All right, well, God shows himself to those who love him. Who loves him? Whoever has my commands and obeys them, he's the one who loves me. And what we see here is what, you know, I would call the divine spiral. Now, here's what we need to understand. The clear picture we get from the Bible is that God reveals himself to everyone. So the place in the Bible where it says that since the beginning of time, God has been making himself known through his created works and through other things to all of us, that all of us have heard the whispers of God. All of us, God has revealed himself to all of us. But then when we bring this picture and we see this divine spiral that says there's a part for us in this process, because what happens is God reveals himself, we respond, and then God reveals more. Only the word he uses for respond is a word that we don't quite like so much. See, because God reveals, we obey, and then God reveals more. God reveals himself, which who he is truth. Responding to truth is called obedience. So we have the spiral of God reveals, and that's grace. We do not earn that at all. We do not, it's not by how good we are, the rules we keep, how smart our thoughts are, anything like that. God's revelation to all of us is completely grace. It's nothing but grace. We don't deserve it, and it comes to everybody. But God reveals himself, then our response is we obey or not, and then when we obey, God reveals more. And I know that's not a popular word, you know, because it makes it feels like it's an assault on our self-preservation. It's an assault on our individuality. It's an assault on our independence. And yes, it absolutely is. It's an assault on all those things. So our Creator reveals himself. When we obey, then he reveals more. And I want to be careful here because we're not talking about some sort of contractual relationship with God. Not talking about some sort of deal we've negotiated. You know, where I do these three things on my end, I uphold that, and then God does these three things for me. No, it's not that at all. It's not this contractual thing. First of all, because, you know, if we're negotiating some sort of deal with God, we've got to recognize that's not really what we want. We are not in a very good negotiating posture with God. Has anybody here ever been through any kind of negotiating training? You know, any kind of training they give you on how to negotiate a deal and how to go about it. Yeah, I went through that at one point, and they teach us some basic things about negotiating and entering into a deal with somebody. And one of the very basic things they teach you is, you know, never be the first one to throw out a number, throw out an offer. Always try to get the other person to throw out the offer first, because then you have more leeway, you know, in how to bargain. And then what they tell you is that when that person throws out the other offer, there's something that you can do that immediately lowers their expectations of what they're going to get out of you in the deal. You know, what you do is, what's your name?
Marianne.
Okay, all right. Let's say I want to sell you this bottle of water. Make me an offer. It's called the flinch. It's very subtle. Somebody makes you offer, very subtle. Immediately lowers the other person's expectations of what they're going to get out of the deal. You know, so, you know, just a little inside tip. Ladies, if you have a date tonight, you know, when the guy opens the door and you meet him for the first time, it will immediately lower his expectations for the whole thing. And then you can work from there. There's this other thing, though, that they teach you. The most important thing about any deal. Never enter into a deal that you can't afford to walk away from. You are an absolutely dead meat ever to enter into any negotiations that you can't walk away from. We want to think about, you know, that our obedience is somehow this contractual relationship with God. We've got to understand how dead in the water we are on that. We've got to understand any kind of negotiating posture that how we're dead. And here's you know, kind of an example. This is the Apostle Paul now, and he's writing to the new church in Rome, and he's talking about this very fact, and this is what he says in the book of Romans. Who has ever given to God that God should repay him? For from him and through him and to him are all things. And what Paul's saying here is, what have we ever given to God? What could anybody ever possibly give to God? What does God need from any of us? Nothing. Absolutely nothing. Through him and to him are all things. God needs nothing from us. What kind of negotiating session is that to enter into? Now, it's not that God doesn't desire us. Absolutely, he desires us. He desires to share his love with us, and he desires to be in relationship with us. But he doesn't need us. And all throughout the Bible, there's this picture of God with us that is in relational terms. He doesn't want a contract. He doesn't want a deal. He wants a relationship. He uses words like, he's our father, we're his child. Jesus uses words like, he's our friend. He's looking for a relationship. But a relationship's very different than a contract. Because in a relationship, what this is God is looking, he's kind of this call and response to this relationship. Where God speaks, we respond with obedience, and then he speaks more. And it's this kind of call and response is what is the path of wisdom. Defines the path of wisdom is God's call, our response, and then God speaks more to us. And so, in a very real way, in this sense, wisdom and growth do not result in obedience. Obedience results in wisdom and growth. Wisdom and growth don't result in obedience. Wisdom and growth come from obedience. God reveals, we obey, God reveals more. Have you ever heard someone say, there's no substitute for experience? I've heard that a lot. And you know what? There's very real truth to that in a lot of ways. I've seen in my life, you know, that there's no substitute for experience. However, I had somebody challenge me on that a few years ago, and they're absolutely right. And they said, you know what? Very often, in a lot of life, people say there's no substitute for experience. There is. There is a substitute for experience. It's called obedience. We don't have to learn everything the hard way. We don't have to make all these mistakes and then learn through it. There is very often a substitute for experience, and it's called obedience. Responding to the truth that we do have. Now, I want to be careful here because I know that there's folks in here all over the spiritual spectrum. You know, I know there's folks in here who, you know, you're not sure about, you know, whether the Bible, is that something you should really take seriously in your life? Some of us in here, you're not even sure, is there a God or not? But you're asking questions and you're exploring. And that's awesome. That's awesome. We are thrilled you're here. That's why we created this community, was for that exact thing. And I want to let you know, a lot of those questions are very healthy. I want to affirm those questions in you because some of us feel, you know what, I don't want to have to commit intellectual suicide to embrace my faith. And that's a very, very true thing, and you shouldn't have to. And I want to honor those questions, and I want to tell you that you need to wrestle with them and be on a journey of getting answers. However, I do want to tell you that part of this process, and it's for all of us. I mean, we all in here, wherever you find yourself on that continuum, we all aspire to be seekers. We all aspire to be seekers of truth. I aspire every day to be a seeker of truth, and in varying degrees, I do that well from day to day. Sometimes I'm not as honest seeking as I am on other days, but we all aspire to that. The thing is, wherever you are in that continuum of seeking truth and what you believe about some things, wherever you are, the answer, the key to the way of wisdom is whatever it is right now that you do know to be true, you do something with it. You act on it. Whatever you do know to be true, you do something with it. You digest what you have and then you get more. There is no, wherever you are in that continuum, there is no such thing as more revealed wisdom for you if you're not doing anything with the truth that you do have already. That's just not the way it works. And it's not a contractual thing of God punishing you. It's that the fact that the path of wisdom is where the blessings of God are. It is where the more wisdom lies. To step off that path, God isn't punishing us. That's just not where he is. And so there's this interesting place in the Bible where Jesus is kind of talking about this, those that aren't quite sure what he's saying is true or not. And he gives this interesting answer to one of the ways that we work out whether, you know, it's true or not. You know, whether, for instance, whether Jesus' words in the Bible are true or not. And take a look at this one way that Jesus throws out that we need to consider as part of our equation. This is a little bit earlier in the book of John. This is John 7, verse 17. Jesus says, if anyone chooses to do God's will, he will find out whether my teaching comes from God or whether I speak on my own. This might be the most ridiculous, challenging thing that Jesus said that's in the Bible. Because what he's saying is, he's saying, if you're not sure whether it's true or not, here's an idea. Do it. Do it, and you'll find out whether it's true. Apply the wisdom that I'm telling you to your life, and then test it and see if it's not true or not. Jesus lays it on the line. He says, I'm not afraid of this. If you're wondering whether my words are true or not or stuff I'm just making up, try it out and see what happens. And so it's very good for us to look for answers to our questions. That is an honorable part of your journey. Just don't confuse it that that's 100% of your growth equation, because part of your growth equation is going to be actually applying it to your life, and that will be part of the way that it's proven true or not. I think that one of our challenges is not really, though, so much in how we define wisdom. It's how we define obedience. You know, because it's a word we don't use often, because quite frankly, we just don't like it that much. So we can tend to misunderstand it. So when it comes to applying God's truth to our life, I think one of the things we can do is there are parts of life where God's truth, God's revealed truth that we know, we just know to be right. Whatever that it is, we know it to be right. There are some parts of life where it intersects. It converges with what we like and what we want to do. And that's a really cool thing. That's a really cool thing where God's truth converges with our life, intersects with what we like and what we want to do. And we should do that. That's not a bad thing. We should do that. That's a very smart thing. However, we should not confuse that with obedience. Should not confuse that with obedience. You see, because there's all these other areas of life that we will run into where God's truth that we know is true, whether we like it or not, we know it's true, and it doesn't converge with what we like or what we want to do in the moment. And in that moment, when we say, I'm going to default to doing what I know is true as opposed to what I like, that's obedience. And that's the path of wisdom. And over we will find ourselves when God reveals, when we obey, when we don't like it, that seems to be the particularly sweet spot of growth. I know I've found that in my life. I've been thinking about this week as I've been thinking about wisdom. And Nancy and I next month are going to be celebrating our 15th year wedding anniversary. 15 years we're going to be celebrating next month. Yeah, well, you're apparently as surprised as we are, so, you know, thanks for that. Now, we'll be celebrating 15 years. You know, it's not perfect, but it is good. It is good. And I was thinking back on this and how often obeying truth that we know, even when we didn't like it, has been a lifesaver. How often it's been a lifesaver for me personally, how often it's been a lifesaver for Nancy personally, how often it's been a lifesaver for our marriage and our family. And you know, one example. I talked in here before about how part of the story, part of my story, part of my past is some, pretty sordid sexual stuff, my past. And you know what? I'm not alone. I know most of us in here have some stuff from our past sexually, you know, that we're not proud of, that we wish we could change. You know, some people call them, you know, an indiscretion. I call mine, the 80s, basically what I call mine. And I've talked about it in here before, and that one of the pieces of me in that was pornography. and how it played, you know, it was kind of such a formative role for me in my dating relationships and how I interacted with women, even women that were just friends of mine, how it affected me kind of across the board. And I started to come to a place, this is before I ever met Nancy. Before I ever met Nancy, I started coming to a place and realizing the destructive toll this was taking on my life. Now, you know, whatever that you think about it, I can just tell you, I'm telling you my story here, is that I found it taking an incredible destructive toll on my life, because I found what it was doing was it was totally distorting the way that I thought, the way that I thought about women, the way that I, the reasons why I thought that they were in my life, and it screwed up not only my friendships, but it also screwed up, obviously, you know, my dating relationships in a lot of ways. And I started to find that I could not have a completely healthy relationship, particularly a dating relationship, when I had those kind of images constantly pouring through my head, that it just, for some reason, threw it all off. And I didn't realize it at the time, but I was discovering God's truth. I didn't realize that that was part of God's wisdom. I just realized that on a very pragmatic way, this is taking a toll in my life. And now that I look back on it, I realize that it was God's wisdom. God's very clear, is very clear that if we are going to unconditionally surrender ourselves physically to someone, part and parcel, that is designed, it's just how the way we're designed, that we unconditionally surrender all of ourselves to that person. And God's very clear that if you just want a recipe for pain in your life, if you want a recipe for pain, just mix unconditional intimacy with conditional commitment. You want pain, whether it's pain in those around you, pain in you, just try to mix unconditional intimacy with conditional commitment. And so I discovered that and didn't even realize, you know, it was kind of God's wisdom, but I started to work on that and grow on that. And then entering into my dating relationship with Nancy, it was so much healthier than anything had been before. And so it was, we'd been married a couple years. Things were going well. We'd been married several years. And Nancy went out of town. And I found myself in old patterns. And I found myself at the video store. And I rented a video that, let's just say, never received Academy Award consideration. Okay? And I remember just being struck by what a stupid choice, just how quickly I could fall back into stuff that I knew was not healthy. And I knew the benefit that I was having of having stayed away from that in my life, and I knew what happened when I went back to it. And I remember being struck at the time of how God's wisdom in my life is of little to no value if I'm not acting on it. If I just have it in my head, what good is it? And it also disturbed me how quickly I could fall back into old patterns. And so I looked around me at the time, and I said, you know what? This isn't abnormal, what I did. It's very normal. I mean, look at everyone around me. Look at all the images that we get. This is very normal. And I started to feel a little bit better about myself because of that. And then I started to look around, I started to look at the other things that we define as normal. And that the very people that define these things as normal, what's normal is also relationships that are just falling apart at the seams, distrust, lack of commitment, no real intimacy. And that's normal, folks. That's the average out there. And I started to realize, you know what? I don't want normal anymore. I don't want normal. And I realized that God's way of wisdom is abnormal. So I realized I was going to have to make some abnormal choices in my life if I was going to keep myself, for selfish reasons, on the path of wisdom. I was going to have to make some abnormal choices. And so for instance, Nancy's out of town this weekend, celebrating her mom's birthday out of town. I will not go into a video store by myself. I just don't. That's one of the rules I have in my life. I'm not saying that's what everybody needs to do. I'm saying for me, I've had to make that choice. Through our internet provider at home, I am categorized and have all the same screeners and all the same filters that my 8-year-old and my 11-year-old have. I won't go to a movie unless I know why it's rated, what it is, and if there's attractive people taking their clothes off, I won't see it. I don't care how many Academy Awards it received. Actually, I don't want to see unattractive people taking their clothes off either. But doesn't seem to be a big problem for me. So that's weird, isn't it? Isn't that weird? That's not normal. Absolutely, it's not normal. You know what? I don't want the normal path. And it seems weird. You know what? And, you know, it's like, you know, that song that Stephen did there. It could seem foolish. It could seem strange because it's so countercultural when God's wisdom comes kind of rummaging through our nice intellectual reserved path that we call wisdom. I had to decide for me. Now, I want to be clear here. I'm not giving you new rules. You may not need to do any of those. I'm not saying those are blanket rules for everyone or anything. I'm not here about laying some kind of law on you that you have to follow, you have to feel guilty about. All I'm telling you is that for me, I realized that if I was going to stay on the path of wisdom, I was going to have to eliminate any other options in my life. And I don't know what it is for you, but I think very often, even when we do discover wisdom, when we start to move toward it, one of the things that we will do is we'll also keep all our other options open. And so we'll say, you know, yeah, I'll do this, but, you know, I want to keep these other options open, you know, in the name of my independence, in the name of my freedom, you know, in the name of what I have the rights to. And so we keep our other options open. I just decided in my life, I don't want to keep any options open that are off the path of wisdom. I want them shut down. I don't even want the chance. Because I know the benefit. I know the benefit of being in a relationship with my wife where we're both completely surrendered to each other physically and mentally, and I know the benefit of that kind of intimacy, and that only comes about through one way. God reveals, we obey, God reveals more. That's the path of wisdom. You know, and it's not that we don't screw up. Absolutely we do. And there is grace, and there is second, third, fourth, fifth, and 100th chances. There is grace in this. But when we screw up, we stand back up and we step back on that path. You know, I think that this knowing-doing gap can be something that we contribute to here at Crossroads. Because I think what we're in danger of doing is you could come here every weekend and we throw all this information at you, and then there's this challenge of something that you need to go do, and then you come back 6 or 7 days later and there's all this new information and this new challenge of something you need to go do, and it goes over and over, and that can be the rhythm of boom, new information, wow, that was very stirring, that was great truth, boom, out of here, supposed to go do this, and then come back the next week and then the same thing over and over again. And the danger in that is what can end up happening for us sometimes is we can come in here and say, wow, that was interesting, wow, that was true, that was challenging, that was really interesting, and we go out here and say, wow, I've grown. No. No, you haven't. Not if you haven't done anything with it. All you've done is you've gotten some more interesting, maybe spiritual wisdom, trivia. For it to become wisdom becomes wisdom when we act on it. And so we want to do something a little bit different. We're going to close the service a little bit different way today. We're going to do a song. And the song is about just being on this path of wisdom toward the plans God has for our life and fully engaging in that. So the band will do the song, and you feel free to sing along if you like. At the end of the song, the band's going to continue playing and just doing some instrumental. And what I want you to do during the end of that song, during the instrumental part, is I want you just, you know, kind of have a conversation with God. Because we don't want to give you any new information this weekend. What we want you to do is wrestle with the question of, what do you already know that you don't do? Where is that knowing-doing gap in your life? And for some of us, the first time I mentioned that during the service, it was very clear to you. It's been bouncing around in your head ever since. And you know very clearly something that you know is true and you don't do. For others of us, we need a little bit more time. And we need God to kind of focus our thoughts and to kind of focus in on us and tell us, this is the one thing. This is the one thing I want you concerned about that you know. And I don't even want to give you any clues or hints of what that might be. It may be a very different thing for every single one of us in here. I don't want to give you any new stimuli for that this weekend. What I want you to do is just to sit there with God and let God focus in on what is the one thing He wants you to be aware of that you know but you don't do. And then as soon as He makes that real to you, you're free to leave. You're free to leave. And for some of us, we'll be able to leave very quickly because it's become clear very quickly. And that's great. If you're a parent, You know, I just want to tell you, if you do at that point and you can leave early, just take this as a brief little gift to you. Do not go back and pick up your children early. It'll kind of mess with what they're doing back there with the kids today, the journey they have them on. So just treat it as just a few extra minutes in the atrium, grab another cup of coffee, just relax or something. But band's going to do this song, and I just want you to sit there and ask God, God, what is it? What is it that I know and I don't do? And as soon as you know that, you're free to leave. You can go, and this week, just do something about it.